Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today, everybody. I'm very excited today because we're going to do something a little different. Last week, I interviewed a dear friend of mine, Lisa Stewart, who also happens to be a member of my Toastmasters group. And so when I started to interview Lisa, she said, well, who's going to interview you? And she said she would like to do that. So today, Lisa is going to interview me on the show. So welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
And thanks for doing this. And I just hope I have something to share that listeners are going to like too. I think we'll have some fun. So let's just get started, I guess.
I think we'll have some fun too. Okay, first question is, tell us about yourself, Jack.
Okay. So I actually grew up in New York on Long Island, about 20 miles outside of New York City. And then I read a book about Montana when I was in fourth grade and said, I'm going to move there someday. And the book was called Sasha, My Friend. It's out of print. It's by this woman, Barbara Corcoran, who's written lots of great books for kids way before YA literature was popular. And then in high school, I got Montana Magazine. And so when I was 21, I applied to the University of Montana and moved out to Missoula. And then when I was a junior, I my friends were like, you should go plant trees. And this one friend of mine said, you should go work for this crew, the Frog Skinners, up in Eureka, Montana. And I said, the Frog Skinners, okay. And they gave me the phone number, and it turned out to be Lisa's husband. And I called him, and he hired me, and I came up here to work for the Forest Service to plant trees, which was one of the hardest things, but definitely one of my all-time favorite jobs ever. And that's where I met my husband, Mike, on the mountain, just right in the middle of the woods. And we've been happily married for 22, almost 23 years in a couple of weeks. And that's how I ended up here. And then we're both just passionate environmentalists. And he really is the biggest gardener who's taught me everything I know. A lot of you know I talk about my in the garden that he does a lot of the work. But I think I've learned enough that we're going to get through this. So basically, that's how I got here. The interesting thing in the book, the little girl moves to Libby, which is in Lincoln County where we live. It's not very far from here. And her dad has 20 acres, or her dad has tons of Christmas trees. We have, I think he has like 500 acres. We have 20 acres, a lot of Christmas trees on here and like natural Doug firs that Mike sold forever. So I always think that's a really interesting tidbit about that book that I got so close. And I didn't realize that till I'd been living here for like almost 10 years. And I ordered the book from Amazon and was like, wow, she lived in Libby right near here. So I got pretty close. So that's a quick little bit about me and how I ended up gardening in Montana.
So how long ago was it that you originally came to Montana?
I moved to Montana in 1988, right after the big Yellowstone fire. And then I was in Missoula for 3 years, and then I came up here in 91. It was my first season planting trees, and then we got married in 93. So,
okay. What was your first gardening experience here or anywhere?
So my mom, who I interviewed on episode 10, was always a big gardener. And so my very first experiences were just in my backyard or her front yard. She always had a beautiful garden. She grows tons of herbs. But the one thing I do want to mention, like where I actually gardened was she signed us up for the summer program at this place called the Clark Botanical Gardens in New York, who and they had like a gardening program for kids, and you can still go there, your kids, if you're on Long Island. It's if you've never been to the Clark Botanical Gardens and you live on Long Island, it's probably about the same size as our property. It's probably about 20 acres there, and they just have gorgeous flowers, and there's tons of information, and then there's the garden where the kids work, and there's a little house there. And so that was our very first experience. I have to say, my mom tried to get me to garden when I was a kid, and I was definitely not interested whatsoever in being out in the hot sun. She thrives in the hot sun like that. I kind of wilt. But I'm getting better. So that was my first experience. She didn't grow as many vegetables. We grew vegetables at the Clark Gardens. The thing I remember the most about that was always having to bend down because it was down in on the ground, whereas Mike has built all these raised beds. And to me, that's the huge difference. When you don't have to bend over, like backbreaking weeding, when you're up in the raised beds and you can sit, or you can sit on the edge of the bed and weed, to me, that makes it all the more appealing.
User-friendly, huh?
Yes. Convenient, user-friendly. Mm-hmm.
What does organic gardening or earth-friendly mean to you?
Well, organic gardening to me, like since I've started this podcast, tons of people have been talking about permaculture, and I don't know much about that, but organic gardening to me means not using chemical, using natural like compost to enhance your soil, not spraying any kind of chemical or fertilizers on your plants, doing what you can do to create like an ecosystem that, you know, makes your plants grow in a natural way. Because I just think putting pesticides on our fruit and vegetables that you're going to eat, it just seems counterproductive. Like there's a better way to get rid of the weeds. And I always think it's got to be less expensive. I know it maybe seems more labor consuming or... But I think if you water properly, we've always had a shortage of water. So by watering less and putting the water right at the roots, we get less weeds all the time. And also like after reading Rodale's Organic Gardening magazine, which is what inspired me to learn about organic gardening and promote organic gardening, how they talk about their farm test trial, where they... So back in like, I can't remember if it's 1941 or 1947, but back in the 1940s, they started two giant test pots, and they would plant the commercial way, conventional way, using fertilizers and pesticides and different things, and they would plant the organic way. And so side by side, they did all these trials, you know, they planted the same crops the same year, and every year, the organic methods produced more because they said that the conventional methods are going to produce more only if you have the exact ideal conditions. Those processes, those chemicals and things are made for when you have the exact amount of sun, the exact amount of heat, the exact amount of rain, just everything is ideal. And just, we all know in nature, we don't get that. And that was the only time the conventional methods would produce more, whatever crop, potatoes or wheat or whatever that they were growing. And so, and the article was all about feeding the world, that we have the technology, we have the knowledge to feed the world now. There's no reason for any people anywhere to be going hungry. And that was what really touched me. And we just need the political will.
So is Rodale what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Well, I would say that inspired me as far as being an adult. But my mom, I mean, really, ultimately, she always grew that way. My mom is like a passionate educator. She taught kindergarten for 25 years and subbed before that, was the head of the PTA, you know, the president of her auxiliary garden club at the Botanical Gardens for years. And just, she couldn't walk down her street, I don't think, without talking to the neighbors about the benefits of organic or anywhere. She just was a natural educator. And so I think just living with her and being around her, we always had a compost. She used to use a recycled milk container. Of course, now she's probably got some fancy porcelain, nice little thing with the lid and everything. But when I was a kid, and I loved it. And I remember going to college and my friends being like, what is this thing on the counter? And I was like, don't you always have a milk carton on your counter? You know, and that was back when they were cardboard and you opened up the top and we just kept our compost in there. And, you know, and this is like in Brooklyn, my very first college experience was, at Pratt Institute, but we lived in an apartment, so we had a kitchen and a fridge and everything and food, and so I just automatically started collecting compost and probably took it home to my mom's on Long Island in the weekend. I don't know what I did do with it, but I think I just always was surrounded that way.
Mm-hmm. So how have you taught yourself to garden organically?
Well, I mean, you know, I read the Organic Gardening magazines, you know, I watched my mom for years, but really, Mike has taught me everything. And one of these days I'm going to get him on here and he'll tell us. But I think just practice is how he learned doing it. He's always been gardening since he was a kid. And his mom had a garden here. We have the last 20. His parents had a 1,200-acre ranch here, and we have the last 20 of it. So he's kind of gardened in this area ever since he moved up here when he was in junior high. So, and even before he was in Colorado when he was a kid, they probably had gardens down there. So definitely from watching Mike. I mean, we've always had compost. You know, we started small. When I look at, we used to have just like a 10-foot bed because, like you talked about the cows. Well, we never had cows here really, but we've had deer. So we just had like a 10x4. We had these two beds, and we just put like little triangular. I don't know. He built like these sides, and he would put like these fence, like chicken wire on a, you know, two by fours and, or probably 2x1s, probably something light. And he just kind of built these little triangular teepee things to keep the deer out. And that was just how we started. And then just over the years, just building up. But I would say Mike's probably taught me the most, because as an adult, just watching him over the years.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm not mistaken, did you haul water for your garden?
We did haul water. Like, let's see, we put a shallow well in 1999, but then we just dug our actual well, which is 560 feet deep, 2 years ago, or in 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. Yeah. And so from 93 or 91 till 99, yeah, we hauled water. We had a giant water truck that would hold 1,500 gallons, and we'd either go to the creek or somebody's house and fill it up. And that was how we did a lot of our watering. And I've always thought the most magical thing about that was actually when Mike would water the grass. And we had like, it was just gravity fed out of that truck, and it would water like a little 3-foot round radius area. And he would, in the middle of August when the lawn was just brown, he would just move that like every 10 minutes or so, and you could just literally see the lawn turning green. It was like painting the lawn. But yeah, that's how we watered for a long time, was just either out of that truck, or we hauled 5-gallon. We didn't really like, when we were hauling 5-gallon buckets of water for, you know, washing dishes and showers and food, we did not have a big garden. Like I said, we started with those little 4x10, those two little beds, and then just it's grown over the years. But but even when we had our shallow well, we could still, our growing was very limited.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never been able to put spigots. Like this morning I got up and there was a spigot going out in the yard and the sprinkler watering the fruit trees, and I was like, wow, look at that.
It's so pretty amazing when you struggle for water, mm-hmm, to finally have it.
Yes. And I think you learn a lot that way about how to grow with limited resources. Like I talk about a lot, because we had that limited water and you were just really aiming for the roots of the plant. You were only going to water, you know, our weeds were just so limited. When I look out in the garden even this year and I think, oh my goodness, that the grass that's already growing in some of the beds, the crabgrass and stuff that's coming up, that's got to get pulled. It kind of scares me sometimes.
So, what grew Mike well started, for you?
Let me just quickly. So Mike started this like new, I call it like the mini farm, and it's like another, I don't know, probably a half acre that he fenced in. So all his focus has been down there. So our regular garden, that's got over 260 feet of fence. I don't know how big this area is around our house, which is where like the tomatoes and the peppers and everything that's in the greenhouse right now is going to go. So those beds haven't been weeded in. Those are the ones that I'm kind of worried about. Anyway, what grew well last year? I'm going to say what grew well last year is our apples in our fruit trees. I just can't believe we planted an orchard with 14 fruit trees. I think 10 of them are apples. There's two pears. There's an apricot and a cherry. And the apples have just produced so much fruit. Baskets and baskets of fruit. I had no idea that new apple trees that we just planted would be producing so much fruit already. And then we have one apple tree that we planted back in 2005, I think, And it's just prolific how many apples. So I would definitely say our apples. And I think a lot of that has to do with the extra water that we got to put on, because we did turn our well on last spring, but we just didn't get to do much with it. And I think that extra water really helped them grow, and being able to, like the other day I went down there and filled up 2 5-gallon buckets and put 10 gallons of water on every tree. It took me, I don't know, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. But, you know, years ago, that would have taken hours if I would have had to do it from the creek or we just couldn't. I mean, you couldn't haul that much water.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there something you're going to do different this year, or are you going to try that's new?
I'm actually going to try to grow kale, because I've never grown kale before. And after listening to the podcast and all my guests talk about kale, and I kind of started that green smoothie thing, but I don't know about that. I mean, everybody tells me I really need to add hemp protein, and so I thought, oh, the green smoothie thing will be a good way to get that in. But I just have a hard time crushing up my vegetables. Like, to me, especially this winter, like, I finally bought spinach and I was practically in tears putting it in the blender. I was like, why am I doing this? This doesn't make sense. So and I liked kale, just putting it, like chopping it up and putting it in my eggs the way it was. So I'm going to grow kale, but I'm probably not going to do the green smoothie thing.
Mm-hmm. My favorite way to eat kale is raw in salads.
It is? Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love salads. So it'd be kind of nice to have something new to add to my salads, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what didn't work so well for you last year?
I'm going to say what didn't work well for me was my sage plant, because my sage plant died. I've had this sage plant. It's been huge and so beautiful, and I love the blooms it gets. And like, one of my all-time favorite recipes is raviolis with a sage butter sauce, not a tomato sauce, but just like a butter with just and very little bit of butter, but mostly the sage, that I got some restaurant in New York one day and was like, I can make this. And sometimes when I'm really lucky, Mike makes homemade raviolis, because he's really good at baking macaroons. And macaroons use tons of egg whites. So then when there's tons of egg yolks left over, he makes homemade noodles. Mm. But he's not as big of a ravioli fan. So he only makes the raviolis for me every once in a while. But they are so good. But yeah, my sage plant just died out of the blue. So I have to come up with a new sage plant.
No idea why?
No, I don't know why. But I pulled it out. It didn't come back this year, and so.
What's something that you find easy to grow and is successful?
I think the easiest thing to grow around here, the most successful thing, would be. Oh, what was I going to say for this? I think just like simple things like carrots, radishes, spinach. Spinach is used because spinach will come up through the snow. It's like it practically reseeds itself. I'm going to go with spinach. I would definitely say spinach is the easiest thing to grow that comes up for me.
Perfect. And is there something that you would steer a new gardener away from that you find challenging?
I practiced this so well last week, and now I've forgotten. What was I going to say for this? I think the most challenging thing to grow here, I am going to say potatoes. Even though we get lots of potatoes, and I don't know, like Peggy was on my show, Peggy Housley, and she suggested that maybe it's the soil, that we're not putting enough alkaline, but we've always had really scabby potatoes. Now, I always thought it was our lack of water and being able to water consistently. You know, and we would like, you know, they would get dried out a lot. And I always thought that's what led to the scabs. But she gave me the impression that it could be the soil, because we all think we have very acidic soil because of all the pine needles. But we really don't. We actually have very alkaline soil. So she suggested we do a soil test. So I bought Mike those soil tester things. So we'll find out. I don't know. Last year when he had more water and he grew 100 pounds of potatoes, we didn't have the scabby problem as much. But I think those are hard for people to grow. The other one I think that's really hard are cabbages. To grow cabbages without bugs. And I know that some people say you can use this dipple dust and some other organic pesticides to put on them. But then when I read what the pesticide does, like it eats out the caterpillars' insides, I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. So we, Mike did grow, he never really grows a lot of cabbage plants. He grows incredible broccolis, which always amaze me, especially starting from broccoli seeds. But last year he grew some, we got two just the most delicious cabbages I've ever eaten. And that was another tip somebody gave me, was harvest them right away so they, the bugs don't have as much time to get in there. Although I think that caterpillar on the cabbage, like it said, it lays its eggs and they're born just right inside of the cabbage, kind of eats it from the inside out. But I mean, it had like a cabbage hole or two, but I just cut those off and just the cabbage leaves. But that was some delicious coleslaw I made out of that cabbage. So, but I think cabbages are hard. I think potatoes are a little challenging, but I mean, it's not, you know, scabs aren't that big of a deal. We've, you know, we just peel them off.
Right. What's your favorite activity to do in the garden? And then right behind that, what's your least favorite activity to do?
My least favorite activity to do is anything that gets me super dirty inside of my jeans. So like sometimes even harvesting, because I come home from work or anything that like, I don't like to have, I like to go down there in my flip-flops and I like to go down there, I don't want to get all dirty, and I'll come home after work and go down to harvest sometimes, and then the next thing you know, I'm standing in the dirt or something, and I got dirt in my toes and dirt in my clothes, and I'm only planning on being there for like 5 minutes, and then I've been down there for a half hour, and anything that gets me, I like clean gardening jobs. Like, people are always like, I hate mowing the lawn. I love mowing the lawn. To me, mowing the lawn's a nice, clean gardening job. Or I do like digging beds, like brand new beds, like when you pull out that sod, you know, when you're digging with your shovel. But then I'm wearing my hiking boots, you know, and then I'm planning on a day of the dirt, and I have jeans that are specifically for gardening, but I don't like to go down there when I'm in my street clothes and get them all dirty. So sometimes even harvesting or pulling weeds or anything that I'm doing that I'm not planning on spending the day in the garden, for me. And I don't like that itchy feeling of the dirt inside my clothes. Like, my gardening jeans are for gardening, and then I take them off, you know, unless we're going firewood. And my favorite job to do is not really a job. It's definitely painting in the garden, going down there, hanging out, listening to the birds and the loons that go over and the animals around, and just being in the garden, going down there with my coffee with Mike in the morning and filling in my journal, just hanging out in the garden.
That is probably a lot of our favorite gardeners' favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Hang out in your garden.
Yeah. I call it the organic oasis, because it is like a little oasis. Like, before we had running water, we used to go to the lake all the time, like all summer long, like every single day. We would go to the lake, we would do it. We were just laughing about this the other day, and I was like, you know, I don't even hardly go to the lake anymore. Because we just go down to the garden and sit down there in the shade in the evenings and hang out, and or any time, and just this is like my favorite place to be. So
yeah, I'm going to have a lot of visitors this summer, and I live where there's lots of coyotes and more wildlife than they are used to. And I've decided I'm going to put the tent in my garden, because one, it's fenced, and two, it's just a beautiful, beautiful spot.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think your guests will like that too.
I hope so. What's the best crop you ever grew?
The best crop that we ever grew. I think my lettuce, my pea sign full of lettuce. I just love being able to go down there and pull the leaves off. And it, what, there was one year where I had lettuce straight through all the way through September, like through the hot August summer, just, and I just love being able to constantly go, just pick the leaves off the outside and get, I mean, I talk a lot about, I get like two giant baskets of lettuce, and 3 days later there'll be two more giant baskets, and just, it's just, it gets a little prolific. But I think that's the best crop I ever grew, was a pea sign full of lettuce. There's a couple of years.
Do you like have a favorite? Do you have a favorite lettuce?
I like the black seeded Simpson. That seems to work the best for me for that design, and just having those different heads come up. But I just pull the outer leaves off. I rarely pull a whole head out of the ground. And I don't really like the romaine. When we've grown romaine, We get those little, what are they called? Those nasty bugs that look like roaches. The earwigs.
Earwigs.
Ooh, those guys just give me the creeps. And I swear you just can't bring a head of romaine lettuce up here without earwigs crawling out of it to me. So mm-hmm. I like the black-seeded Simpson myself.
Mm-hmm. What was the most sage gardening advice you've ever received?
I would say probably just start and start small. Just always, you know, just like we started, like when we didn't have a lot of water, we just started it small and just have over the years just built up. Every year we've put in a couple of new beds and done a few more projects and, you know, having the deer fence, a few times I've tried to grow flowers and different things outside the deer fence, and that's just hasn't worked. So I would say, you know, start small, try things, see what works, see what doesn't, and journaling about it, writing down what works has always been helpful for me. Like to me, looking back at my journal at the beginning of the season and saying, this is what I wanted more of last year, trying to record that, to me, that's the best advice. To me, it comes from my journal from the years before and what didn't work, what we need more of. That's always the big one. Mm-hmm. What did we need more of last year that we didn't have enough of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep a pretty extensive log of my garden.
You do?
What I've put into the beds. Oh, yeah. What I've put into the beds as far as composting, how it worked, what it grew, how much I planted, where I planted it so I can move it next year and not plant the same thing twice. Mm-hmm. I
think that's more good advice. Mike talks about that a lot, rotating your crops and knowing where you put what each year, which to me is always hard because it seems like a lot of food fits in a certain bed a certain way. Mike's got our gardens pretty cool because it's got all different shapes. Like there's one that's like in the shape of a boat, and there's, I don't know, it just seems like there's all these different places and like certain vegetables fit in them a perfect way, but always remembering to rotate your crops is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing that you have all those extensive journals. I didn't realize that you had that. A nice
well,
log.
I just keep a binder. Mm-hmm. I have a binder. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't have it through the years because from year to year, maybe I'll let it go depending on sometimes it gets wet. Sometimes it gets dirty. You know, I carry it with me out to the garden. Mm-hmm. But I always have last year's to this year's. For sure, and then work on this year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I keep track of almost everything.
Nice.
Have you ever entered anything in the fair?
Well, I haven't, but Mike has entered lots of things in the fair. Actually, the one thing I entered that they even took a picture of and put it in the Go Kootenai book was these two carrots that came out all twisted up, and then I dug out little holes and put huckleberry eyes in them and called it Couple in Love. So that was the one thing I guess I entered in the fair that was kind of fun because it won a prize.
Yeah. So, what was the prize?
I can't remember. It got a ribbon, you know. I can't remember if it got first, second, or third, one of those colors.
Oh, I was thinking it would have been the most photographable or something.
I don't think so. I don't remember that part. I just remember it got a ribbon, so I was excited.
How about your favorite tool? If you only could have one tool, what would it be?
Okay, so I decided that my favorite tool, when I very first created this question, my first thing that came to my head was my shovel, but then I decided that I could probably, carve a stick into a shovel. I could probably figure out things to dig with, but I do not want to live without a wheelbarrow. To me, my wheelbarrow is essential. And maybe it's because we got flat in our wheelbarrow one year and we couldn't afford to replace it. It was like two summers before I could get a new wheelbarrow that I think a wheelbarrow is so much more expensive than a shovel. And so it would be harder to replace. So I would say my wheelbarrow. I mean, for moving compost, for carrying pot, I mean, for hauling water, without a doubt, you know, you put 2 or 3 5-gallon buckets of water in a wheelbarrow, it's a lot easier than carrying them by hand. And I've definitely moved a lot of water that way. But I find, you know, getting Mike to do things, the wheelbarrow helps, cleaning up messes, but definitely moving the compost around, moving heavy things, rocks. We do a ton of rock work. Mike's always... Now, that's one of my favorite jobs, helping Mike with the rock work. I'm not as good... I always think the rock work reminds me of like a Montessori classroom. I think the garden is like a Montessori classroom. And that figuring out how to get the rocks to form a wall without it falling down like Mike's got tons of rock walls around here, and they look easy, but really to build a wall that's not going to fall down and get those pieces to stay on top of each other isn't all that easy to do. And mm-hmm. when you're hauling a lot of rocks, you know, the wheelbarrow comes in handy. So I decided to change my answer to that question is my wheelbarrow.
Do you have any secrets for preserving food or making it last?
Well, Mike does a lot of canning, but I haven't. I remember when I first moved here, I learned how to can peaches. That was really cool. Just freezing things for me is probably what I do. I just blanch broccoli. I love to blanch broccoli and then put it in the freezer so that it, because for me, then it's almost like cooked when you get it out and you're putting it in. And I'll throw broccoli on anything, on pizzas, on potatoes, in stir fries, in just about anything, omelets, just anything. And I like having that frozen broccoli. So that would be my secret. Just blanch it and freeze it. And I don't think we could grow enough broccoli for me to eat for a whole year. That would be hard. I'm a broccoli. That's by far my all-time favorite food.
Well, on the note of throwing broccoli in anything, do you have special techniques for cooking unusual foods?
Well, I'm just going to say, like, taking a salad. One of my favorite unusual foods is arugula. I don't know how unusual that is to other people, but I love putting just a tiny bit of arugula in a salad. I don't like to put a lot of it in there because then it gets overwhelmed. But I would say if you haven't tried arugula, that's one of my favorite salad things to put in a salad.
Well, you've talked a lot about all the great things you get to eat. What's a favorite recipe that you like to cook from the garden?
Okay, and so this I definitely know. And I don't know if it really counts as a recipe from the garden, but it's what I put on my garden salad, and that's my hemp seed oil salad dressing, or any kind of salad dressing. But I make a delicious salad dressing. I use olive oil, and I put a little mustard in it, either some spicy brown mustard or Grey Poupon, just different mustards. Either balsamic vinegar or just regular red wine vinegar. But I like to mix that hemp seed oil in because everybody's always telling me the hemp seed protein is so important. And so hemp seed oil you have to keep in your fridge and it gets pretty expensive. So I mix it probably 2/3 olive oil and just 1/3 hemp seed oil because it also kind of mm-hmm. has like a strong flavor. And so if mm-hmm. you mix it with the olive oil, I think it cuts that flavor a little. And so just picking, you know, lettuce and putting some peas, some sugar snap peas in the beginning of the season and some fresh radishes. And if I have some arugula or any kind of, my mom's always got fresh herbs. I have some herbs like some thyme and some oregano that I'll mix. I like to mix herbs in with my salad dressing and just blend it up in the blender or not in the blender, in the food processor. And then that's my favorite recipe is my hemp seed olive oil salad dressing to go on a fresh salad.
It sounds delicious.
Thanks.
Yep. What's a favorite internet resource for you?
So there have been a lot of really cool resources mentioned on my show. One of my favorites is John Moore's Organic Gardening Magazine. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardeners had an incredible website with lots of YouTube videos that I've been going to a lot lately. This girl, the Honey Urban, Honey's Urban Homestead, I think is what it's called. Her website's full of tons of great videos. So those are three of my favorite resources to go to on the internet. My favorite blog is definitely Maria Rodale's blog. Of all the gardening blogs I've been looking at, I love when I get her blog post in my email box. It's one of the few emails who's, you know, that I actually read. I get tons of them, but I don't always read them all. But I love Maria Rodale. She kind of reminds me of... I don't know if I'd say she reminds me of me, but I just think she's inspirational. She talks about the things I like. She'll mix up recipes with organic gardening, you know, things to do in your home or, you know, with the regular gardening tips. She just kind of mixes it up. It's not just always about gardening. It's about, one of her great ones I read was about using, recycled cloths, like cutting up old t-shirts or rags that you have around your house instead of buying wipes or instead of paper towels, which is something I've always been big on. I'm not a big paper towel. Mike and I probably go through a roll of paper towels like every 6 months. Like we just always have rags or old socks with holes in them or different things. And she had a really good blog post about how to, you know, make like wipes by just taking rags and soaking them in soapy water and keeping them in a Ziploc bag. And then you just have them accessible, that I thought was really cool. And she just has tons of great stuff. So that, those are some of my favorite internet resources.
And how about reading material?
Well, first and foremost is definitely Organic Gardening Magazine. I mean, we've subscribed to that for years, and just there's always tons of good tips in there. And just, I think after you read that, it just becomes a part of your personality, and it kind of just soaks into your being, and you just kind of, things become second nature after reading that. Some of my other favorite books are, I talk a lot about Lynn Bazansky's The Flower Farmer, which got me interested in marketing flowers and the whole process of growing flowers. There's another really good one by Richard, I think it's Riswell, called The Organic Farmer Business Handbook, that just really has a lot of great information, and it comes with a CD where you can download like Excel spreadsheets and different things for how to grow for market. If we were ever going to grow food to sell, it talks to you about how to make a business plan and how to grow for if you were going to, like, you know, go to a farmer's market or start a CSA or something. He's just got some incredible information in that book. And then any of the Rodales, I mean, we have them all, the Ultimate Encyclopedia of Gardening, the Organic Herb, Rodales Organic Herb Encyclopedia. I was looking on the shelf the other day when I was thinking about this answer. There's a perennials book that we use a lot. And then one book that I noticed that we have that I remember Mike reading a lot was Better Homes and Gardens, book on gardening. And I'll put the links to all of these books in the show notes. So those are my favorite books.
Good. So are you thinking of starting a flower business? And if you are, what are your thoughts on getting started in that industry?
So I am thinking about becoming a flower farmer. And so I definitely recommend Lynn's book. And then also I had Lisa Ziegler on, was my guest number two. And she wrote a book called Cool Flowers. And it's about planting annuals for sale. And so between the two of them, they're just packed full of knowledge on what to do. And the biggest thing that I've learned from the books, and also from talking to like health food stores, like when we've had some extra produce and I've kind of tried to take it to different places and see if they would be interested, is that you need to be consistent. And so that's why this summer my goal is to try to grow enough sunflowers just to be consistent before I even try to take them to market. I'm gonna see, you know, how much can I get? Can I get enough so that I have a constant thing of flowers every 2 weeks? And then a lot of people, and I've read a lot, and I've been talking to some different farmers, is about and studying different people's blogs that have been doing this, and belong to several Facebook groups. And that's another great resource I forgot about, the internet, is belonging to different Facebook groups where you can post. One of my favorite Facebook groups is there's a flower farmer Facebook group, and people talk about prices and different things to bloom, and especially when you're planning for weddings. But just being consistent and giving flowers, going down to the florists at different places that you think you might want to sell, leaving them samples and doing it repeatedly, and just constantly showing up there each week, whether they buy them or not. But they talk about quality, and, you know, usually if you have organic flowers, you're going to have pretty good quality. You might have to, pick your best ones. But a lot of things they talk about is transportation, because your transportation, and that's one of the things that draws me to sunflowers, is they said sunflowers are really hard to transport. So they're more likely to like locally grown flowers, because they're not going to be as damaged from transporting. I mean, what I'm drawn to sunflowers for a lot of reasons. I mean, not just because they're beautiful, but they have big seeds. I always find carrots are the hardest thing to plant because those seeds are so tiny. And then I end up with like 6,000 carrots, and I hate to thin them because it seems like such a waste. But then if you don't thin them, then you don't get any carrots. And I think carrots are a great thing for kids. When our grandkids are around, I'm like, let's go plant some carrots, you know, because they have tiny little fingers and they can spread them out easier than I can. And I like sunflowers because they're big seeds, and so you can see them and spread them out. So that's one of the things that draws me to sunflowers. Besides what you were saying about the bird feeders, I just keep thinking about that and think it's a great idea. And I have had, you know, sunflowers that have gone to seed that we've put out for the birds, but I've never really hung one from a tree like you were saying. And I've just been thinking about what different things I could do with that. So I would say just, you know, research it, talk to people, and just ask questions and find in your market. Like a lot of people on my show have said to the answer to this question, if you're not growing enough for farmers markets, the best place to start is restaurants. Restaurants are more likely to be interested in local food. So I have not tried restaurants. And then yesterday I had a guest on who was talking about growing culinary herbs. And I thought, oh, that might be just something right there, is, you know, just focusing on culinary herbs. And I'm excited to try some oregano pesto. People keep talking about, I never knew you could make pesto out of anything but basil. But since I have tons and tons of oregano, I'm going to try to make some oregano pesto this year. So I'm not sure. That's kind of a long roundabout answer to that question.
It was a good answer.
And I have not made any money selling anything ever. I've tried to go to the farmer's market with, like, you know, a bundle of lettuce here and a bundle of lettuce there. And I don't know. I just have never had any luck. But I think it comes down to that consistency point. People don't know me. They don't, you know. And I also thought it was hard to go to the farmer's market in the evenings. By then, the produce was kind of, you know, starting to wilt. And it's hot in the evening. How do you keep it? You know, do you bring a bed of ice, or how do you keep it cool? So that was one of the things I struggled with the farmer's market in the evening, too, was keeping my food looking fresh. But
what is the one change you'd like to see to make the world greener?
Okay. So I have two answers for this. There's my organization that I'm passionate about, which is 350.org. And if you haven't heard of Bill McKibben, you should learn about him. He wrote a book called, it's right here on my desk, Fight Global Warming Now. It's called The Handbook for Taking Action in Your Community. I think he wrote it in 2007, but it's just as pertinent today as it was then. And the biggest thing he talks about there is people don't like to talk about global warming and climate change because they feel like they don't know the science. It sounds like it's some complex thing that's really hard to understand. But he talks about the most important thing is just, you don't have to learn a lot about it. There's very basic facts. I actually made a little video of the science. I made like a little book you can download. It's a PDF file. It's on our Organic Gardener website. If you go to awesomemontana.com and click on Mike's Green Garden, there's a link to it there, and I'll put it in the show notes for this day. And I just kind of like, I made a little, it's kind of like a little tiny booklet of their science and just broke it down really simply. And then I made a video of me reading the book to kind of explain it even a little bit more. But there's not that much science. And 350, they called it 350.org because 350 parts per million is the amount of carbon dioxide that can go into the atmosphere that our Earth can survive the way we're living right now, that we can have, you know, our trees and our water and our food growing. And we have surpassed this. We are now up to, when he wrote this book, we were down in the 300s and hoping we weren't going to get much higher. And he wanted us to stop before we hit the 350 mark. I can't remember if it was last December, like December 2013, I think. I'll have to check on the actual number, but we broke 400 parts per million, not just 350 parts per million. We have to push it back down. And so I would encourage everybody to read Bill's book, learn who Bill McKibben is. He, in September, they had the biggest environmental I don't know if you call it a protest, but they had a march in New York City on September 21st for, which is also weird because that's International Peace Day, but Ban Ki-moon asked for people, the Secretary of the United Nations, for people to come to help get support for climate change for coming up with a plan to combat climate change on a global scale. And so Bill McKibben got all these people, hundreds of thousands of people marched in New York City. There was very little press about it in comparison for the amount of people that showed up. It was amazing that they did that. And just him and Al Gore are by far the biggest leaders fighting climate change today. But if you don't know who Bill McKibben is, 350.org. That would be my organization. And then the other thing I was going to say, the other crucial issue, the thing that I think that we could see is I really think we need to deschedule marijuana and cannabis as a Schedule I drug. And people might not understand the importance of that. But if we can't grow hemp, I think, you know, we can't grow hemp because marijuana is considered a Schedule I drug. And I think hemp is one of the biggest things we can do to combat climate change myself. I think, you know, it's instead of cutting down trees or burning fossil fuel, you know, Henry Ford back in the early 1920s, I think, or when he first built a car out of hemp seed oil, and it's strong, it's light. We can, you know, reduce our gas mileage. There's so many things you can make out of hemp. You can make concrete. They're building concrete. And we can grow it right here in the United States. We used to grow it. There's films called Hemp for Victory about where the United States during World War, I think right before World War II, I think it came out in 1937, and they had a movie called Hemp for Victory, and people were, the United States government, the Department of Agriculture, was encouraging people to grow hemp for ropes for the Navy, for clothing, because it was a textile that we used and it doesn't require a lot of the chemicals. It doesn't require a lot of the processes that cotton does. You can make clothes out of it. You can make super strong, you know, backpacks and tents and canvas out of it. And then the protein, people are always telling me, you know, I should be eating hemp seed protein because, you know, I don't eat meat really. And so people have always told me, you know, that's a great source of protein. Or even if you eat meat, it's still one of the best sources of protein. And the hemp seed oil, there's so many uses for it. And then, you know, there's the whole medicine that kids are dying, that parents are flocking to Denver to get medicine for their children who are suffering from seizure. You know, that there's that whole piece of it, too. So not only is it a healthy thing for our planet, you know, and also, I mean, there's the whole irony of if you think it's better to have, you know, an unregulated market as compared to a regulated market. I just think that's kind of naive in today's society to think people are not going to get marijuana because it's illegal. I mean, it's totally backwards. If you care about kids not being able to have access to it, you want a regulated market like, you know, cigarettes or beer. And there's that whole piece. So those are my two big things, 350.org and delisting marijuana from the schedule, whatever, so we can study it and so we can grow hemp, because I think hemp will make a greener plant.
Mm-hmm. What's your inspiration tip or quote to motivate your listeners to get into that dirt and start their own gardens?
Sorry, my alarm going off. My inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners is, just, you'll be surprised at how good it feels to grow something and to spend some time out in your backyard or wherever your green place is, even if it's just a plant on your windowsill, like my basil plant in the middle of winter. I don't keep an oregano plant because I have so much dried oregano, but I have a basil plant that I just love to have that fresh basil. When you start growing some fresh tomatoes, I mean, our health food store in town, Heaven's Peak, their motto was, it's all about the taste. When you grow something fresh in your own garden and you taste it, you're never going to be able to go back to just buying ordinary produce. And so I would just say, start small, start way small. I think a lot of gardeners get excited. You see all those plants. I'm notorious for it. Even seeds this year, you know, I came home from Home Depot back in February with like $75 worth of seeds. And Mike was just like, what is this? I was like, oh, it's a business expense, Mike. We're starting the podcast, you know, and he just kind of laughed. But we have put a lot of them in the ground. I like the fact that you can get organic seeds at Home Depot this year. I bought a ton of Burpees and Martha Stewart organic seeds right there that were easily accessible. But definitely start small. Don't go crazy because you're going to burn yourself out, especially come August. I would say make it convenient, you know, the deep beds. If you haven't grown anything in raised beds, you know, find a gardener that can help you figure out what a raised bed, find somebody that can help you build a raised bed. I think raised beds just make it so much easier. If you can sit on the edge of your bed and weed, it's not as big of a project as you're bending over and reaching. And I think that makes it harder for harvesting too. I looked at Mike because he's got all the lettuce planted out in his new little mini farm. And I thought, oh, that's going to be a lot harder to harvest and weed in not long as compared to my place. I usually sit on the edge, but make it close. Like my favorite anniversary present, when Mike and I have been married for 14 years, he built me my all-time favorite anniversary present, which is a compost bin right outside my kitchen door. So while I'm cooking dinner, I just go throw the compost right out right while I'm cooking it, instead of it having to be in the bucket on the counter. It's just easy. And I would have, like, I've always thought we should have like a little mini salad garden right outside the door, instead of our garden's kind of down a hill. And it doesn't seem far, but for some reason, salads are always kind of an afterthought to me. And I think about it right when I'm like actually putting the food on the table. I'm like, oh yeah, I was going to make me a salad. And then by the time I run down, grab some greens and some radishes, throw a little salad together, you know, he's already eaten and the food's cold or whatever. And I think it would be nice to just have the salad out, a salad garden outside my window. So make it convenient, start small, and it's all about the taste.
Well, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to interview you. Oh. You were a great interview, great answers to the questions. And I want to tell the people of your podcast, I've known you since you came to Montana, basically. I've known you since 1991. And when I think of you, I think that you are such a dedicated peacekeeper. Oh. And you're really dedicated in spreading the word about the goodness of the earth.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. And thanks for doing this with me today. I really appreciate it.
So absolutely.
I hope I shared some knowledge with listeners and inspired them.
You shared knowledge with me.
I did? Okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah,
all right.
I learned something. Yeah. Cool.
Well, excellent.
Yeah. Take care.
Have a good day. Okay.
You too.
Hi, listeners. Some of you may have noticed I changed my name in the introduction because I made a Facebook page where you can connect with me. So just go to Jackie Marie Beyer, and Beyer is spelled B-E-Y-E-R, even though it's pronounced like I'm going to the store to buy something. It's B-E-Y-E-R. And say hi. I'd love to get to know you and connect with other gardeners. I'm thinking about creating some kind of organic gardener podcast community. So if you have any suggestions for that, but I'd just love to reach out to some of you listeners in a little, more friendly fashion. You all know I love Facebook, and anything on my smartphone. Also, if you or someone you know is an organic gardener with a journey to share on the show, please let me know or introduce me. I'm always looking for new guests to interview. I think I've counted, I've had guests from about 16 states, including like Florida, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Washington, Oregon, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Texas, Wisconsin, New York, and of course, lots of people from Montana. Quite a few other states. I think there's 16 total, plus some international guests. We have people from Canada and Australia on already. But I would love to reach out. So we have somebody from all 50 states, some different countries. So you're always surprised at what you have to share. I know lots of my listeners have been a little hesitant and then they got on here. It's tons of fun. I always find myself laughing a lot. And so if you know of anybody who'd like to be a guest, or if you just want to connect with me on Facebook, I'd love to, you know, meet you. So, and connect on there. So, just wanted to let you know that's what that's about. Thanks. Hope you enjoy today's show.